Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
To the mouth of manliness with me, Nicholas Noyes. We're back again. This one is another Zoom interview because we are still in 80% of lockdown at least. And I'm really, really pleased to say that I've got Liam McLeod here with us.
Hi.
Hello. I guess what I was kind of saying before is that I've liked the way that you're very open about mental health, and I think that's the way forward, you know, for people to be honest about things. And the position that you're in, to have, we'll get into it, but to go on what you've been through, where you're kind of in that kind of hero status, to then say, no, but then... But then within that, say, no, I'm vulnerable. I think that's a bit special because I don't think people tend to do it, which is one of my big reasons for kind of wanting to get you on, really. That and the fact that you've done my mate Stuart's one and he said you're a lovely fellow.
I can't believe anyone would listen to that and think I want him on my podcast.
Well, to be honest, I kind of dip in and out of podcasts, so I'm just like, yeah. I know, like, theirs is a bit different to this, I guess.
Just a bit.
So, you're a policeman still.
I am indeed, yes. About five years in now, I think, roughly.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, mate. Still quite, well, there's quite a high turnover in policing, especially in the force I'm in. So actually 5 years isn't new anymore. There's a lot of people that have been in a lot longer, but yeah, 5 years. I do tutoring now. I've got a lot of courses out of it, so yeah, I'm kind of one of the more experienced people that are certainly on my, well, yeah, in my station now. Yeah,
my sister's a police officer, and her husband, and she's just retired. She's 50.
I've got a long way to go.
So she started when she was like 18, 19, I think. Like, so she's done all of her time and she's retired, and now she's a lecturer. She did like so many kind of courses and exams that it all lumped together creates a degree.
There's a lot of courses you can do that you can sort of take out and use for other things as well. It's not just sort of policey. There are sort of things you can do that go a bit outside of that box. So yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. Yeah, it made it much more worthwhile. So recently, like, you've kind of said stuff about PTSD. It did get me to thinking, really, about the kind of jobs like that. See, like, I'm a probation officer, so I hear lots of terrible, terrible things. Mm. You know, and in some ways, I'm kind of lucky that I can brush a lot of it off. But you know, like, you think you sometimes you're almost experiencing someone else's trauma because you're hearing stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just a crazy old thing. So do you want to, if you're all right, tell us how you came to prominence. Do you mind going through it?
Yes, it's quite. So there's a really long story and there's a slightly condensed version. I'm going to go for the slightly condensed one.
Yeah, yeah.
So the long story short is, I was working. I was within my 2 years of being a police officer. I was still in my probation. I was on duty on a night shift. Left our station at London Bridge and walked into a marauding terror attack. I'm putting that in really simple terms, as if it's all just like that happens every day. It doesn't. You know, I can go into more about it than I could before, but, you know, my colleague was obviously injured. We engaged in a conflict with these armed terrorists. And then pretty much, I mean, it all happened so quickly. It was minutes, really, that I was engaged with them or anything was happening with them. Well, not even that, in fact. And then I was kind of, out and about all night, just doing first aid and stuff anyway. And really, I mean, so from that, I got a gallantry medal from the Queen, which was pretty cool. But between the terror attack and getting a medal off the Queen, I had a really hard time with my mental health, which I hadn't certainly to any major extent before. Just kind of had a really rough time, to be honest.
Okay, so
that was the quick version.
I just want to put it in perspective. So for people who don't know, or people who are in other parts of the world, but I imagine people know about this, was it was by Borough Market, isn't it?
Yeah, Borough Market and London Bridge.
Yeah, some terrorists basically kind of with like knives and machetes just started going into people. And you and your colleague were the first ones there?
Yeah, we just genuinely, we just left the office and heard a noise away to our left, only about 100 yards away. Didn't really know what it was, didn't think anything, to be honest, of it, because it's a Saturday night in London, Champions League final we'd been on, so didn't think, oh, something's going on that you've got to have, you know, massive attention. But my colleague was on my left and he was really looking for a while. We half went to walk off and he stopped again, was looking. He said, oh, I think there's a fight. So we just ran to the end of the street.
Yeah.
I remember someone come up to us and said, there's a fight or something like that. There's a fight over there or something, or they've gone that way. I can't remember exactly now. So we crossed over the road again and someone then informed me that someone had been stabbed. So without being horrible, like, stabbings happen. So I still wasn't thinking anything untoward. There's nothing on the radio, there's nothing obviously going on that, you know, certainly I was aware of at that stage.
Yeah.
So I was just treating this initial thing as what it is, it's a stabbing. And then, a few seconds after that, just heard shouting to my right, and that was when basically my colleague was being attacked. So I ran up to him, and that was where we had this kind of standoff thing. So it's pretty, it was weird.
It's fucking scary, but I imagine to some extent you're trying to, like, go into it rather than, like I'd be running. Like, I'm shit scared of everything, and I don't mind admitting I am not very manly. I'd be running. I'd like to think I'd do more, but I don't think I would.
It's odd, like, you go through stuff in training school about, you know, the terrorism threat, and it is high, and it is, you know, it's real. But it's not that you're blasé, but you never really think you're going to be there when it happened, you know, right there. The Westminster attack that happened a few months before, I think it happened in March.
Yeah, it wasn't
much. I was on duty then and kind of had some involvement in terms of just witness contact, but had, you know, you never expect to necessarily be completely first-hand front line in that kind of environment, and as much as you train for it, like, I can honestly say there was nothing really I was doing where I was thinking right about what training had taught me. I went into autopilot, and the one thing I've always said, and like, I know we joke about it, but like, I do kind of play down the hero thing purely because it was autopilot. I wasn't thinking I need to go and do this or I need to go and do that. I just reacted, and so that's the only thing I'm glad about, is actually I reacted and I done some good.
Yeah.
Because, you know, fight, the whole fight and flight thing is real. And I think, you know, I'm sure a lot of people did run away that night, and I don't blame a single person. And obviously, not just myself, there was my colleague, there was Charlie, who was an off-duty Met officer who I'm pals with now, and loads of other people obviously didn't run away. They tried to fight as well. So I'm glad I was one of them. And that's kind of where I draw the line with it, really. It's not something that I massively define myself as a hero at all, nothing like that.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, essentially, you're kind of, I mean, not to, I don't want to play it down either, but essentially, like, you're kind of, that's your job, isn't it?
It's true.
You get so trained for quite a long time to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you did it.
The one thing that sticks in mind, which is what they say, and it's like, it's a bit cliche and it is a bit cheesy at times, but it's true. It's like we as a police officer, you go towards the things that other people go away from.
Yeah.
And that's, like you say, it was my job. And I'll hold my hands up. If I was off duty on that night, do I necessarily think I would have done the same thing? Probably not. But who knows?
So it's, I think more often not to a trauma in a not particularly good way. Or in a way that it just kind of fucking messes us up.
Yeah.
So what was the initial aftermath then for you?
It's so weird. Like, it's hindsight as well. Hindsight is a wonderful thing. So I can look back now and think of all these little things where it's like, that was a sign of things not being good. Yeah. So, like, even, like, there was so much adrenaline on the night anyway. And I remember, like, when the adrenaline stopped, I was crying. We went back to this yard in Waterloo, got into this front office, and I was trying to keep together. And one of my colleagues came to me, he knew what my initial involvement had been. He was like, "Are you all right?" I was like, "Nah." So just broke down then, which I guess is kind of normal anyway. But yeah. I tried, my whole mentality for anything in life has always been try and get back to normal as quick as possible. So while I would never have gone back into the work the next night, I would have been probably quite happy to just go back in the night after that. I don't know. Something was different. There was little things I was looking out for. Like, so one thing in particular is when I got home, about 10 o'clock in the morning, the night after it happened, so probably like 12 hours after this all began.
Yeah.
And I was married at the time and had a little boy, and I had to go and obviously tell my missus exactly what had happened, and got quite upset then again, but it's fine. And then went up to bed just to get some kip, which I would do. And I remember in the back of my head, I was like, I don't want to, I hope I sleep okay, because I was really scared of.
Yeah.
Kind of replaying things in your head just in your sleep. And like, there was one thing in particular that I've always remembered from that night, and I won't talk about it now because it's just a bit inappropriate, but there's something that's always stuck in my head from that night. And I can't, for honestly about 2 weeks afterwards, every time I was going to bed, I would think about it, and it was weird, like, because I'd almost laugh, because it's like, if at least I'm thinking about it now, I'm not thinking about it, and then it's not going to be in my head when I'm asleep. But yeah. It was like, it was always in the back of my head, like, I hope I sleep all right. I pretty much was back to work like normal. Didn't have long off. Within a week, I was back.
How does that work? If you say you're okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I was always told, like, look, you take as much time as you need. Whether it's, yeah, like I say, I guess it's just my mentality. It was always,
it's not as simple as that.
Get back to normal. And you know, I felt, like the emotions, I can't remember exactly, but I know I felt like this sadness, not for any massive reason. Like, by that point, I knew my colleague was all right, wasn't going to die. You know, I knew I'd done all right. So, I mean, I wasn't looking for praise or anything, but I knew I'd done all right.
Yeah.
So I just was trying to get back to normal, really. I still worked, like, at London Bridge. So clearly that was not going to happen straight away. But yeah, I was just trying to get back to normal. And I think, like, and I don't, it's not the job's fault. Like they were, there were certain people saying like, you should probably take a bit of time off. But I wanted to be there. I wanted to try and, I don't know, just kind of do my bit with the aftermath, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was given the choice of taking time off, but I didn't want to. And I think if someone had tried to force me, then I would have been pretty pissed off about it as well, to be brutally honest.
Yeah.
So there's no criticism for them. But yeah, like I said, I just remember one time in particular, which would have been, so it happened on like a Saturday night. It was a Thursday. I was on late, and I was having like just rest. I was having something to eat, but I had no appetite, and it was like, I didn't really realise, like I say, at the time, didn't really realise anything, but there was this anxiety that was clearly like building up in me, and I just didn't think anything of it. I just felt, I feel a bit sad, didn't really, as weird as it sounds, didn't really know why.
But you don't know what to do, do you? Like, you're not meant to know either, you know, like, how do you know what to do with that?
It's hindsight. With hindsight now, I look back and I'm just like, God, you're so stupid. But at the time, I couldn't really figure out why. I was never hungry, so like that happened a lot. Where it would be at a normal eating time, and I just wouldn't be hungry. And I remember that night in particular, like I was trying to pretty much force myself because I don't think I'd eaten all day. But then I just started feeling sick. So it's just like, well, okay, I won't then. And I guess things just kind of carried on like that for a little while, really. I can't remember exactly, but like I say, after a little period, I guess I felt all right. See, now I'm thinking about it, remembering there was one other thing that I was really doing a lot of the time. Like, I've always been quiet, outgoing, loud, probably quite annoying to people, but like a bit of a joker.
Yeah.
And I remember I'd be in the station and I'd say something to try and get a laugh. And then immediately in the back of my head, I'd be like, why did you say that? Because it's not really funny. Or it's not just something that you've just naturally said.
Like that kind of self-doubt.
Yeah, like the fact that I was noticing it, I was like, why have you said that? Like, shut up. Like, that was one thing that I really remembered at the time and really, like, was just like, what's going on here? It was odd.
It's so weird how it is after the event. Like, when I've been on, like, kind of like on the, you know, like, say, like, it might be 6 months build up to a fucking meltdown.
Yeah.
I have the meltdown, and then I'm like, and then I talk it through with a therapist or even my wife, and then I'm like,
yeah.
I was talking about, like, dying, and you know, like, and I didn't even realise that I was getting into those conversations.
Oh, exactly. It's true, man. It's true. It's still, I mean, I still get that now. Like, but I totally get that. I totally get that.
You don't know at the time.
It's weird how you don't. Like you say, you don't, and like, I mean, as you all know, I've had a bit of a rough week anyway. But even that's been building up and building up. And even at the point where, like, again, it was one of my skippers this week who was like, are you all right? And I just, like, proper had a meltdown and let it all out and just got really upset. And I look even back at that now and think, like, why the hell did I let it build up to that point where someone's noticing it in me and saying, what's, like, are you all right? Because I should have. I'd like to think by now I would know, and I knew I wasn't fine, but I think I should have realised I really needed to kind of have a bit of a time out as well.
The thing is, though, Leon, is in that happens, and you can't say I should have.
Mm.
You know, like in an ideal world, you would have noticed it earlier, and you would have dealt with it. And it wouldn't have got to a point. But it's really, I think, like, and I've learnt this so much, is that. If you then go, oh, I should have, and then you get into that blaming cycle.
Yeah, true.
Feeding the beast, right? Yeah, definitely. And you're kind of moving it along, because all the time you're still trying to, you know, like what when you said that, like, you just want to get back to normal, and you always think getting back to normal involves just engaging with life and going along.
Yep.
Sometimes getting back to normal is spending a week in bed. You know,
again,
together.
It's mad because I think, like you said about, you know, how it worked with me going straight back, and I look back now and I think if I had, my missus at the time was kind of like saying you should probably have a bit of time off, and I didn't listen. And you think, well, I don't beat myself up about it now because that wouldn't help, like we say. But
what would you have done at the time anyway? You know, that's what I mean. You, like it's as you say, it's hindsight. You just don't know.
Yeah, but I do just think you never know if I had taken that week, or like you know, good or bad. If I'd taken that week off, where would I be now? I might be in a far better place, but I do think potentially, you know, I could have been far. As I said, I can honestly say, if someone had told me, "No, you're staying off work," I would have been really. I wouldn't have liked that at the time, and then would that have meant I went home and had a massive Barney? Or like, it's the whole butterfly effect thing, anyway. Isn't it? Like, you never know. So it's not something that's something I've beat myself up with for a long time. I think. Yeah, but
I think it's totally understandable what you did. Like, I'll probably do very similar myself. Although I am quite work shy, and if you didn't need to do fuck all, I probably would. But talk us through like the what happened, like the proceeding.
The slowly.
So how long were we talking about then? Between then and now, like it was quite a few.
So that was obviously literally coming up to the 3-year anniversary. Actually, in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks. So I just slowly but surely I just went off the rails. Like I hate it, and just talking about it almost so blasé-ly is wrong, but like I went off with another woman, like left my marital home. There'd never been any issues in my marriage like up to that point, but just ran away, like done everything that I wouldn't normally do. I was drinking loads again. All this is happening, and I just thought, oh, this is some sort of new me. It's, you know, and it's, I like made excuses for myself, and I was like, oh, it's probably fine. But I just went off the rails massively. And like I say, the drinking was something. I'm not a massive drinker. Like, I really ain't. But I was going out drinking on my own. I was just being a cunt. Honestly, that's what I think of it. Like, and I know I can say, all right, I wasn't all right, and that's the truth. But I was just shit human. And the only place that I was kind of normal was at work. And I've discussed it before so many times. Like, you put on the uniform, and it is a bit of an act because you go and break up a fight, and it's something that I, you know, if there's a fight going on in front of you, and you're in this uniform, you've got to go and be the big guy, and you've got to go and break it up. And ordinarily, if I saw a fight, I might try and do something about it. But if I can't, I'll just sort of stand back and hope nothing happens and just watch it and be a witness. Like, but I feel like work didn't go down the pan because I was always going in and putting that act on. Of, I go into work, I put the uniform on, I'm a police officer, and it was every time I'd then come away from work, I was just shit, I was a mess. And again, I still just didn't know what was going on, and like the anxiety got worse. I remember I had this really weird thing where my mother-in-law at the time, she came to stay with us just to help out because I just weren't really, my head wasn't there, and I like to support my missus as well. And I don't know if I'd come home from work or something, or if I was just, might have been off. But I just had it in my head that they were talking about me and that I'd done something wrong. There was nothing going on. There's nothing I'd done wrong. They clearly weren't talking about me either.
Yeah.
But I just had it in my head, and I had to get out of the house. Like, I was just so pent up and upset and aggressive, and I just had to go out. So I just ended up going for a walk for like 2-3 hours just on my own, just to kind of try and chill. But again, like I say, the scary thing for me, I still didn't think there was anything obviously wrong.
It's weird because, you know, you were saying it's almost like if you're upholding your main responsibility as a man is like, you know, working.
Mm.
And you're managing to do that, then the other things, you think, well, no, I'm doing that. I'm doing what I need to do, so everything's all right. It's quite easy to fall into the trap of thinking everything's all right, and it's not. I've done it so many times.
I know, again, like, I know that now so much so, but at the time, as someone who had never really obvious anyway, never had any obvious mental health issues or, you know, any problems around that. I just, it's weird because I can sit here and say, oh, I thought maybe, like, at times I excused my behaviours as like, oh, okay, well, I've been through a traumatic experience and now I'm just this different person and, like, everyone else has got to cope with that. But yet I didn't kind of go, you're a different person here. You, like, you need to kind of probably stop and have a look at what's going on. And I just carried on and, yeah, it was just for, I think, what, so that was June. Yeah, so been about 6 months, 5-6 months, I'd like moved out of my house. I was staying at my mum's. I was going back a few days a week, I think, to like look after my little boy and see him, obviously, because I, you know, I love my little boy. And that's the crazy thing. Like, he is the best thing in the world. And I look back then and it's like, didn't even want to be around him as much as I should have wanted to be. It's just crazy. But yeah, like,
accepting it, that happened, but like, it happens to me, like, fairly regularly, really. I get kind of swept up in my own shit, and I become really crap.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I'm really sorry, you know. Like, once I sort it out, I'm like, I'm really sorry. I'll get back, you know. I'll stop being crap. But yeah, it happens every so often. It's just because I've got an illness.
But yeah, well, yeah, I started counselling, which was through work, within about 3 months, maybe about September time. That was my first bit of counselling, and it weren't great, because I was talking to people about like what was going on. Like, I've got friends and colleagues, I've always been quite open, so I was telling people like exactly what was going on in my life, exactly what was happening, and I probably wasn't always talking to the right people, not in a horrible way. One thing I remember, because I felt like, oh, I don't want to be married anymore, so I wouldn't talk to my best friends, who obviously know my ex now, but knew her. I wouldn't talk to them. And I think, again, that was almost subconsciously, because I knew they'd be like, fucking hell, like, you're not all right, or you're not, the things you're saying aren't you.
Yeah.
So I was talking to, like, work colleagues who wouldn't know everything, so I'd tell them how I was feeling, and they would obviously just be like, well, oh, that's fair enough then. Whereas I feel like if I'd spoken to my good mates and the people that know me, they might have been a bit more like, okay, something's wrong.
It's funny, hindsight. So many things you're describing, I can kind of connect with, because it's like, when you're not well, you almost live a different life. And like the not well life gets into your head so much, you don't want other people telling you, diverting you from it.
Mm.
And some of the stuff you're describing is kind of quite self-destructive as well.
Massively. That's always what I was, that was the kind of thing I was saying when I first went to therapy. I was like, it's self-destructive. Like this woman I'd gone off with as well, like, it was the most poisonous, chaotic affair ever. It wasn't good. It was just negativity a lot of the time. And it was just like, I don't know, it was at times, and if I want to almost give myself, it felt like I was punishing myself as a whole.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really get why, I don't know what's going on, but that it wasn't, it sounds horrible, but it wasn't a good thing. Like, it was just, it was self-destructive. Everything was.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, like, you see, you know, like, you'll see through work, and I see it at work,
people
who have been in really, really awful, like, violent relationships.
Yeah.
They'll then go into another awful, violent relationship.
Yeah.
So it's because they don't feel good enough to have a normal relationship.
Yeah, definitely.
And that self-destructive bit that's like, I don't deserve it. You don't know that you're saying I don't deserve it, but no. You're almost telling the world.
Yeah, it was it was odd. But like I said, that carried on for a while whilst I was having counselling as well, moved out of my house. I don't know when it got like I guess it was around that the back end of the summer would have been, again, when I started drinking, I was just being an arsehole. And then there were times when I'd just be really low as well. And then that was where I think that's probably the kick up the arse for why I ended up in starting the counselling, because I did start to kind of have those suicidal thoughts. And it wasn't always, I don't know, it wasn't always as kind of real or as like, I always feels like this sounds weird. There's different stages to a suicidal thought for me anyway.
I think so, yeah.
You get those kind of just weird thoughts where you'll be standing at a train station, you'll be like, oh, I could just throw myself under a train. That's not all right, granted, but it's not a massive fucking like red alert.
Yeah.
But there was just, yeah, there was times where I'd get those kind of red alerts. Like, and I've said it, I think I spoke about it on Pip's podcast, like there was a time when I was driving, I was staying in a caravan just for a week. Again, that was just to kind of have a week away from everything, a week away from work, week away from like everyone and everything. And I think I'd had a bit of an argument with my miss at the time. So I was driving to this caravan, had God knows what, like blaring out late at night, country roads, pissing down with rain. And I was just like, I just was thinking, I don't care if I crash. I don't care what happens. And like, I know I was driving like an idiot. And you just think like, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's things like that where you look back and again, that should have been such an alert for me of like, you need to get help. You need to do something. Because I was just continuing on this kind of downward spiral, really. Yeah.
I grappled with suicidal thoughts and feelings most of my life, really, and I agree with the, you get the, wouldn't it be bliss just to throw yourself under that, and then it ramps up to that's all I can think about,
you know,
that's all that's going on at any one point ever,
Yeah,
you should try and catch the red alerts much earlier on and wait to get to. That's all I can think about.
Crazy.
So how was the counselling you had? So that was all that good?
I've always said, right.
So variable counselling, though.
So have I. Mostly positive. So I've had like three different counsellors, therapists. And yeah, the first one, thankfully, they've progressed and got better. So the first one just listened to what I was saying and would never really give me, never gave me any feedback, really.
Yeah, it was just,
I'm listening, I'm nodding. And the thing that really bugs me, and I've joked about it, is so with police officers, we're taught to carry out interviews and you're taught to essentially not feel the pause because let someone do it. So I would be sitting there and I would say everything I've got to say because I'm not holding back. I told her everything I wanted to say and I'd stop. And she'd just be doing the and nodding her head. And it's like, I'm sitting there thinking, like, I need you to say something now because I've told you what I need to say. I need you to give me something back. And she just never did. It was like, it's funny to look back. It was a nightmare.
That is a legitimate style of.
I know.
And it's fucking rubbish because the idea, I suppose, is that you come to your own conclusions, which you do anyway. But like, I always find the best therapists I've had are the ones that will go, like, I had something like that, you know, like, and they'll give, they'll give a bit, and then you're like, all right, you're human now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pony. Especially if you know how it works, you're doing it.
That's work. Exactly it. It was just it just became, and I remember by the end, like, I think I had six sessions with her. And it just was by the end, it was like, I just know this isn't going anywhere. I know it's not really working. Like, I know you're not. Like, it's almost a game of, right, I'm just going to say what I've got to say and I'm just going to sit here and we'll see if you can sit on the silence longer.
Yeah, you should make stuff up.
Yeah. I should have.
Right. Silly things.
I saw a dinosaur, but no. But I had that for a few months. Then I had a different counsellor who was really good and that was where she sort of fed me some like CBT tips. So she was good. She was really, I really got on with her. I was gutted to be honest when that could, because I had it through work, you had six sessions, and for some reason you weren't then allowed to continue it.
No, that's
all like short-term help.
That's standards, but really, yeah. Even something like you've been through, you want like psychotherapy or something where, like I've been having the same therapist for 2 years.
Right.
And like the prescription is like 3 years or more.
Yeah.
So you need that kind of regular ongoing, but most things you get through like work or through even the NHS is like 6 weeks, pretty standard.
This is, I can't criticise the job because they were doing what I needed. I'm sure if I'd really gone in banging the door and said, like, I know I need more, I need long term, and I still think I probably could, to be brutally honest. But like the thing is, it especially the second bit, it did help. So that was good. And then probably about a year, like, so I had a break. That would have, the second therapist was February to whenever. Had a break again. And then I remember it was coming up to the first anniversary and I had like a bit of a dip. Can't remember the ins and outs of why. I think, you know, at that point, I was well away from like my ex-partner. She had moved back to kind of where she came from. That sounds rude. I was in London. We were properly separated. And I think then I was starting to have like depression. Well, I started suffering from depression to do with like the breakdown of my marriage.
Yeah, understandably so. Yeah, you've just given yourself another trauma. Like that's one of my traumatic experiences anyway.
It's the weirdest thing as well. Like I remember, and it's all this conflicting thing that was going, all this conflict that was going on in my head. Like I remember one of the saddest moments still in my life was when we'd sold the house that we lived in, sold our marital home. And we were moving out, we were packing everything up. And I couldn't stop crying. I was so upset, like I was so heartbroken. But yet I was still doing it. And it's like, I don't, even then, like I should have been thinking like something is so wrong here that I'm willing to move out of, or, you know, willing to sell this house, willing to move out, willing to break up my marriage. But yet I'm distraught. Like it was horrific. It was, it upsets me to think about it.
I just
kind of, like I said, that was in February, so that would have been around the time that I started with the good counsellor. So, yeah.
What's your understanding of it now? How have you put it together? Like, in hindsight?
It's difficult because my ex-partner, she's a mum to my child, so we have to obviously have a relationship in that sense.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of respect for her. I think she's how she kept everything together when I was the way I was, like, is unbelievable. I know where I was and I know what I was doing. And I know that the Leon before June the 3rd wouldn't have made those decisions.
Yeah.
And yet the me afterwards was willing to. And I can't excuse it because I'd done it. But at the same time, it's like, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
It sounds so stupid, and we've had this discussion back and forth so many times.
Yeah, you couldn't.
She doesn't agree. She's very like, look, you made those choices. You made your bed. Not so you have to lie in it, but she's. I'm not having a pop at her at all.
No.
I know that wasn't me. I know a sensible, sane, normal me wouldn't have made those decisions. Or like I say, the way I look at it, yeah, pre June the 3rd. I wouldn't have made the same decisions I did after that.
I kind of see it as like you were unwell, and as much as you probably didn't realise it, it's taken me a long time to get to a point where I can say I'm not well.
You know,
there's points when I'm not well, and there's points when I'm much better. And like for me, I'd be like, at that point, I was unwell. You know, like most people wouldn't accept that.
Yeah.
So now you had a choice and all those things, but you're like, I was unwell because of this awful traumatic event.
Mm.
And it fucked my head up and I couldn't make sense of the world around me. Mm. And I was doing the best I could at the time. And you might have done some things that, you know, you looking back, you would never have done. Mm. But your brain wasn't functioning as it should.
No, absolutely. Like that, I think if I'm being honest, that's how I have to sell it to myself. Otherwise, I wouldn't get through the day. Like I wouldn't. I do genuinely believe that. Like I do.
It's true, though.
I know where I was. I know how I felt. I know how it's difficult for other people to necessarily get that. But everyone's experience, everyone's life, everyone's, you know, different. Everyone's unique. And
yeah.
I'm not. If someone doesn't understand it or doesn't want to believe it, they don't have to. But I know where I was. I know what I was thinking. And it's like I say, there was this weird thing in my head where everything always felt like a conflict. Everything did. Everything I was doing, there was a conflict there. Even probably going to, well, apart from probably going to work, but, you know, even if I saw a mate, there was some sort of just how much I'm saying, what I'm doing is just all the time. It was, look, I know, looking back, I wasn't well because, you know, a year or so later when I started to actually really get better, and that was when I had therapy, and that really made a difference. And then I could, like I say, I could look back like I can now and be like, fuck, what was going on? What was I doing? And I wish I'd done more sooner because there were some bad lows, you know, there were some really bad lows, and all right, I still have them now, but compared to, like 3 years ago, man, there were some real, real low times.
I often have, I come back to this all the time, and it was really weird. My wife forwarded me this something on Facebook today about forgiving yourself.
Mm.
Or just generally forgiveness, as though you're not forgiving someone who's done something terrible to you, you're forgiving yourself. And saying you don't have to feel bad about it.
Mm.
And I seem to come back to that, for me personally, I come back to that all the time. It's like I'm angry with my dad, and really I need to forgive myself for, like, say, forgive him and say it's all right for me to feel better.
Yeah.
And it's a really tough one. But like that, acceptance and forgiveness, like, for me, it's been a really, real big fucking one that's been the hardest thing I've done, but the most impactful, rewarding thing.
I bet. It's, I don't know, like I say, I think in the back of my head, I know that's right, and I know, if I didn't honestly believe that, then I don't think I'd be able to even get by every day because it would just eat me alive. But it's difficult because, I mean, like I said, I'm not having a pop, but I know sometimes when my ex is, when I don't see my little boy every day, and that kills me. Thank for FaceTime and things like that. But like every time I have to FaceTime, every time I wake up and he's not there, it's a reminder.
Yeah.
And it's hard, man. It's hard, and you know, a little boy needs his dad as well, so.
It takes time, though. It takes time, but those things do kind of square off. After a while. And what you also have to think about is you're doing things to make things better.
Yeah.
For example, you make an effort with your kid, but you also do things like this. You know, like you're doing positive things in the world. And I think, you know, off the back of that recognition of the mental health grief that you are going through, I think you turn it into something more positive and it starts to outweigh the negative.
Massively what I've tried to do, like, especially over the last year or so, or last, you know, 12 months or so. And I'm a bit jumping all over the place with this story, But, like, the one thing, even in the immediate aftermath, the one thing I started to pick up on is I'd be talking to colleagues or even friends or whoever, just in general, and like everyone wanted to know what had gone on. And I had no issue talking about it. I still don't have any issue talking about it, like in that close circle.
Yeah.
And honestly, so many times the conversation would end with them saying, oh, I've had this thing happen. It's nothing like what you've been through. I've had this. And we would just end up talking about stuff. And I like started to click in my head of, like, man, so many people are going through their own shit time. It was fucking crazy, honestly, man. It was crazy how many people would just be like, oh, I've got this guy. And it was, and the funny thing is, they'd always be like, oh, it's nothing like what you've been through. And it's like,
it's all relative.
It's magnitude, yeah, all right, it probably isn't, but if it's affecting you, then it's every bit as big as what I've been through, if not bigger. Like, it doesn't matter.
I know, the impact, the impact is still kind of similar.
Yeah, completely.
It's really funny, isn't it? When you kind of stick your head out there and go, I've had a mental health problem, everyone goes...
Do the meerkat thing.
Yeah, everyone goes, Leon, I've had a mental health problem as well. And you're like,
yeah.
Well, tell me about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, because they know that you won't judge them.
Yeah, but it's really...
Like, that's how the world should be.
It's really therapeutic, I find, when that happens as well. Like, having that conversation with somebody, and I've had that so many times now from colleagues that were at London Bridge, colleagues who have been dealing with other stuff. I've had that conversation so many times where it's just been like, they'll be talking, they'll say something, and I'll be like, they'll just say, for example, they've had that experience. I'll be like, oh yeah, I suffer with that a bit. Like, yeah, I struggle with that. Or, you know, the same way I'll be like, oh, I struggle with X, Y, Z. And they'll be like, oh, right, yeah, I had that as well. And one, it makes you feel like, oh, fucking hell, I'm not alone. Like,
yeah.
Even people get that as well. Like, I don't know, because I do think, like, mental health is quite a selfish thing. Like, I know my mood, when I get, especially sleep is the thing for me now. If I don't get enough sleep, I can fucking go right down really quickly.
You struggle to sleep?
Sometimes. Not often.
These sometimes. People, are you're on shifts?
Yeah. So actually, in a weird way, yeah, like I do all right. And I used to be great. I could sleep. I could probably get a few hours sleep and I'd be fine. Now I'm not. I'm a nightmare. If I don't get enough sleep, if I don't get like at least 6 hours sleep, at some point I'm gonna feel crap and be in a mood. And like, it's selfish in a sense of you can take that out on people, and it's not about always being, you know, really horrible, but it's just like just that cutting comment, even just because I'm in a crap mood, I get that easier than I ever used to. Like, I've never been that kind of person to be short with people or...
The thing is, though, is that, like, you are getting your... Like, years are passing. So, sometimes, it's just the fact that you're just getting a bit older and a little bit...
It's like, true.
It's probably not just that you've been through a traumatic experience. You might be getting a bit older and a bit like, I need more sleep.
You're very right, man, actually.
Oh,
thanks. Cheers,
you tend to, like, I totally get it, because you kind
of... You're right. It's for how far I can... I think it's more like one night not getting sleep, I'll be grumpy. But it's when it goes further down, and it's like, it's the emotions start to go in my head off that. And it's where I go off not enough sleep, rather than me being grumpy because I've
not had enough sleep. Kind of internally.
Yeah. It's exactly. Yeah. I'll just get back, and those things start to just bug you up. And I can normally, like I say, I can have a little power nap and then I'll be all right again. But depending on what I'm doing with work or what's going on, then it can all go a bit. It can go a bit skewed.
It's really strange, because I've always been obsessed with sleep. Like, when I was very young, up until I was like 25, I never used to get to sleep till about 4 o'clock in the morning. Like, even as a real little kid, and my parents would be fucking going mad at me, go sleep, and I could never sleep.
Yeah.
And it was only when I had children I started to be able to sleep. Like, for years, I was drugs and alcohol and anything to get me to sleep. Now I can sleep anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
And like, if I haven't had 9 to 10 hours, like, I'm a bit of a wanker.
9 to 10 hours, man.
Sleep's an obsessive thing with me, and then if I'm ill, if I'm not like mentally well, I will sleep like 20 hours, couple of nights.
I think that's the thing. I want to, like, when I do get in that little bit of a low, I want to sleep more, and I'll get 9 or 10 hours in a night.
Yeah.
But then I'll wake up, and it's again, it's things that were happening at the time, going back 3 years ago. Things are happening then where I'd get loads of sleep, wake up, and you're just, it is that, like, you're glued to the bed. Like, you just don't want to get out of bed. You could easily roll over again. And there was times 3 years ago when obviously I'd have to get up because I've got my little boy, and, you know, and I'd want to. And I'd have to get up for work and stuff like that. And it's the same now. Like, there's times where, for a late turn, say, I don't have to be up till, I'd have to leave the house till gone 12. So I'll set an alarm for 9, which isn't early. But yeah, I'll wake up at 9 and be shattered, snooze for an hour, still shattered. And it's like, it's the quality of sleep, isn't it, really? Rather than...
I'll tell you what, though. When I saw, like, it was probably like maybe 2 or a bit years ago when I, like, my doctor finally took me seriously and referred me to a psychiatrist. That's when I had psychotherapy. And like, my interview with the psychiatrist was, it was stuff like, do you feel tired all the time?
Mm.
You know, like, do you want to sleep all the time?
I've done so many of those questionnaires, you wouldn't believe.
Physically exhausted, and I'm like, I felt physically exhausted my whole fucking life, and I really have, and I don't so much now because I'm much better. But it's amazing how many things I just thought was just me,
completely
symptoms of a mental health problem.
But that's what I mean. That's why I picked up on it, because I used to be able to sleep off, like, no, I used to be fine off no sleep, and then within a month, or not even that, like I say, I'd get a good night's sleep. I'd get solid 8 hours or whatever and wake up and just be knackered. And again, that was still more at a time when I didn't know what was going on. And I couldn't, that's like I say, that sort of coincided with when I wasn't really eating. I just couldn't come in, I couldn't get it. And then I sort of thought, oh, maybe it's because I'm not eating enough. So I'm just tired because I've not got the energy from food. But it's, which it probably was a little bit, but hindsight. Now I know, oh yeah, that was a bit of a...
I really like the fact that you talked about that, because I do that, and I used to do it really badly, without really knowing it, was that when I was really unwell, really eat.
Yeah.
And I used to drink a lot, and that made me really ill. And And it was like that self-destruction. Like, I don't deserve food. Like, none of that was going on in my head.
Yeah.
But like, on a subconscious level somewhere, it was like, no, I'm going to break you down. You haven't got the balls to kill yourself, so we'll starve you to death.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Did you ever have any, like, binges either? Because there was times where it didn't happen that often, but I wouldn't eat. And then I'd just have, like, a mad binge on just shit, and it was like, oh, it was weird. Yeah, that again, that didn't happen very often, but there'd be a day, let's say, where I wouldn't have eaten at work, so I'd get home late and just, like, stuff with crisps and biscuits and just crap, which doesn't end up either.
That's self-destructive as well, isn't it?
So
like, your body's going, feed me, and you're going, all right, I'll fucking feed you, but I'm not going to feed you anything decent. You can't, you're rubbish. Yeah. I'm
going to
feed you
some of
this shit.
Yeah. Oh, it was... Yeah, that and takeaways occasionally as well. Like, I just have these weird, like... I'll eat chicken nuggets, like... Which is great still. Like, I'm not knocking chicken nuggets. They're wonderful. But, yeah, it was... It's, like I say, it's weird. It's weird to think back, because... You just... Everything that was going on at the time, with the benefit of hindsight, is like... Oh, why did I do that? Why didn't I get help? Why didn't I realise something was wrong? I just didn't. And like I say, it probably was just in part where I started having those conversations with people at work, and they're saying, oh, yeah, like, oh yeah, I've had that sort of experience. Rah, rah, rah. I had one friend who I remember, he must have noticed something in me, because he started talking about, like, antidepressants and stuff and medication. But even then, I just thought, no, I don't... It's not me. Like, I don't need it. That's not what's wrong with me. And it's...
Did you have meds in the end?
No, I've never. So, no, like, I'll be brutally honest. I'm thinking, because I had a big dip, like say a couple of weeks, last week or so. And it's the first time I started thinking like maybe I should go to the GP and see what's there. Because I don't know, like I had that, if I'm being really honest, I always had that mentality of I don't want to take stuff. I want to try therapy. I want to try counselling. And my therapy was really good because when that ended, it sounds cliche, but she gave me the tools to kind of continue it anyway. So it's without having to go there and talk about things. It's like I can think about that. I can almost pick apart that ruminating thought in my head anyway. So that was really helpful. But there's been two occasions where I've had massive almost triggers and like, yeah, stuff in the last 3 years. One was when there was another knife attack on London Bridge. Mm. And that was, thankfully, I wasn't working that day. Weirdly, I was meant to be as well. But thankfully, I wasn't at work. And that really hit me just from nowhere, because you never expect that thing to happen again. So that really, really messed me up for a while. But again, after a week or so, I got back to normal, really. And then, like I say, the last week is the first time there's not been a trigger. It's just been, I've been exhausted. Obviously, we're in lockdown, so that's been its own thing anyway. Not seeing your friends and family as much and my little boy as much. It just all suddenly just fucking got me in such a shit place.
It's funny. I've spoken to a lot of people about, a lot of people are struggling in lockdown.
My
kind of main bit of advice is that it's okay to struggle a bit.
Definitely.
Like, it's fucked up. It's weird. It's like...
That's why I don't immediately go to the red alert thing, because you're thinking, oh, no, it's all right to be a bit shit at the moment. Like, a lot of people feel shit.
No, but it's like, I think I more along the lines of, you know, you can let yourself off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, okay, I feel a bit... I feel shit. And it's like, it doesn't mean you're unwell, necessarily. Mm. It might just mean that the circumstances are shit, so you feel a bit shit, and that's okay to feel shit sometimes. Mm. Like that.
I think for the most part, definitely.
Yeah, it's like not to kind of like belittle, but it's like no, yeah, you can feel shit sometimes. You are allowed to feel shit sometimes. Sometimes you have shit happens like in your life and makes you feel shit.
There was something though. Have you seen the second series of Afterlife?
Oh, I'm sure I have. What's Afterlife?
The Ricky Gervais thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've been watching the first series. I'm really disappointed.
The series of that. There's something that happens in the second to last episode. Or is it a lot? No, it's the last episode, I think. Where I don't know if I want to spoil it for you.
No, I've watched it. I'm watching the third series, so I've seen the second series.
Oh, right. So on the second series, when he, it's the last episode, it's obviously when his dad's died, he's sitting there with his pills, and he's going to take an overdose. And mate, that was such a fucking trigger. I swear to God, I was fucked. I've not had anything like that. Something that's fictional has not got to me like that. Oh man, that affected me. And that kind of coinciding with everything that's been going on, like I say, that on top of lockdown, stress at work anyway, and just rest days cancelled. It just all fucking boiled up into this ball of shit. And that was, there was a few days last week, that's as bad as I've been in years. It was that bad.
Do you try and... I know this sounds a bit weird, but try and think about what you're saying to yourself. Because sometimes in those instances, you're saying bad things. You're kind of saying bad shit to yourself.
Yeah.
You always kind of realise it. and then it's like self-talk shit, CBT talk. But saying these things to yourself without even realising it. Like, and you're backing up. You know, like those horrible things because your brain's going...
Yeah, yeah, mate. You sound like my old therapist.
Yeah, but your brain...
Yeah, completely, you're right, yeah.
And then then you kind of have to step back from it and go, hold on, my brain's just telling me loads of shit. Like, it's, I don't need to hear it. I'm okay. Like, I'm fine. Like, it's just a load of shit that I can step away from.
Yeah.
I say it like it's really easy.
Mate, I've got that. I've got it written down on my, like, my notes that my therapist, like, gave me when we said our goodbyes. I know that was one of the things that was on there. And it's like you say, with that ruminating thought. I remember one thing she told me was about, like, if you've got something that's in your head, like, as an issue, and it's like, you know, just can you do anything about it now? No. And she's like, right, so just leave it. Okay, or no, can you do anything about it now? No, yes or no. If not, can you set a time scale for when you can do something about it? Yes or no. And it's like, well, if you can't, then leave it. Just stop beating yourself up. And if you can, then do that thing that stops you beating yourself up. And it, but like you say, it's I've got it written down and stuff. I've got so many notes actually written down, which I probably, to be brutally honest, I should remind myself of more. I should go back and look at it, because that was the whole thing. You know, we left it with, you know, you go back and you look at it, not when you're suddenly feeling shit.
Yeah.
Look at it, remind yourself every few months, because then it is easier when you start to go down a bit, just to go, hold on a minute, like, stop. Which, yeah, when you just say it to somebody, it sounds easier said than done. And when you're in that dark place, it's not easy to say to yourself.
Now, I always see my mental health as I see it in terms of it's an addiction. Like,
mate, you literally are stealing what I was going to say. You're right.
Yeah. So it's like you kind of want to go there. Like, there's every bit of you wants to go there.
Yeah.
But you know you can't go there because you're addicted. So you don't. So for me, I work on my mental health every day. Like, I'm constantly working on it. And then what happens is I don't dip so bad. Like, I do dip.
I don't
crash and burn. So I'm always working on it. Like, it's always, like, you know, like a bad...
You should, though. You're doing it the right way. I'm not.
Yeah, a bad thought comes in your head and I'm like, no. That's, and then the therapy comes in and I'm like, oh, yeah. And I argue with myself and I'm like, can I do anything about it? No. Yeah. And the guy, Peter, my therapist, who I've been seeing for 2 years, and he will just give me one-liners, like, you can only control what you think and what you do. You can't control anything else. So, in principle, you can control how you respond. So you can control, like, if a bad thought comes into your head, you can decide whether you're going to listen to it or not. And then I'm like, that's a bit fucking glib. How you do that? And then, a year down the line, and I am talking a year down the line, I'm like, I do it all the time. I'm like, the lockdown happened, my nan got ill, and I'm like, she's going to fucking die. And then, like, I can't actually, if she does, she does.
Mm.
If she doesn't, great, but I can't actually do anything about it. So I can put that to one side.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely get that.
And I can't worry about it. Mm. And it's like, it's taken, like, this has been my, this is my, like, me, I talk about this and it's like, this is me, like, I've been ill since I was a kid. So now, it's only been the past couple of years when I don't even think would describe myself as being mental anymore.
Describe yourself as being mental. It's you know,
it takes a long time, but
definitely.
But it is quite achievable, I think. And it is. It's just those little nuggets. You know, like you were saying, like you have something written down. It's those little nuggets, and you go, and like sometimes you're like, it makes no sense. Then one day you're like, fucking hell.
Yeah. No, you're right. The thing is, one of the things that I remember, once again, it's all coming back to me now with sitting there talking about it rather than when I actually go and look at it. But you've got to treat your mental health like you do your physical health. If you don't do exercise, you're going to get fat. You know, if you eat crap, don't do exercise, you're going to put on weight. And there's definitely a lot of truth in the fact that if you've suffered from any sort of mental health issue, if you do those little exercises, do those things and remind, like I say, and I'm sitting here, I don't do it enough. I can completely admit that. And again, the last week maybe is to kick up the backside I needed, but you need to kind of look after that and you need to do the exercises and then it'll keep it healthy and maybe.
The thing is though, like Leon,
I'm sitting there saying it now, it's so easy and I haven't been doing it.
But you've done the hard bit.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You've done the hard bit and now, really, you're in maintenance stage.
True.
So now you just need to maintain. So you did the marathon, didn't you?
I did. So I had it in my head that I wanted to, all that crap that had happened, I was like, right, I need to have something good come out of it. So I knew I wanted to run the marathon. It's always been like on my bucket list.
Yeah.
And I'd started getting back into, like, and when I say got back into running, I'm talking about like I was running up to 5-6 miles max. And I sort of thought, right, I want to do like exercise is good, as we should always say, exercise is good for your mental health as well. But so I got back into running and I started thinking, right, I want to try and blag a spot in the marathon. So this was after I'd got the medal off the Queen. So I just emailed the marathon and I was like, the marathon, London Marathon. I just emailed them and I was like, look.
Marathon, can I run you?
Yeah. Hi, London. Can I run through you, please? I knew I wanted to run for like a mental health charity, and there were loads of organisations I contacted when I was in a dark place.
Yeah.
Blagged up a spot and then ran for like a PTSD 999, which is like a blue light service.
It's really strange. I kind of know a bit about PTSD and I don't think it's given the clout it deserves, because it is, like, it's one of the biggies. It's like, you know, like, you know, well, I've got clinical depression.
Yeah.
But I don't think PTSD is taken nearly seriously enough. Because I know other people who have PTSD, and I know it. It significantly impacts on them.
I think the problem is people still generally only associate it with armed forces and that sort of stuff. It's getting, like, I mean, I probably would have up until a few years ago, wouldn't have necessarily associated it with a traumatic event. I would have just thought army and war and not really gone beyond that.
Trauma could be like you shit your pants, you know. It could be fucking anything. It really can.
I went to like a presentation that PTSD 999 were doing, and one of the examples that they were talking about, that, you know, it can be anything, because it could be just that especially the way I look at it in terms of as a police officer or, you know, paramedic or anything, a firefighter, anyone, is you have that little, you've got that armor on. And any horrible traumatic event that you deal with just chips away a little bit. And I remember having this conversation with guy Dave, who's a police officer, and he was saying about it chips away at you, and then it might not be anything that happens at work that takes away that last chink. It could be your dog dying. It could be, which, you know, to a lot of people is really stressful. I haven't got a dog, so I'd be confused if my dog died. But it really could be that anything, that almost something that seems insignificant, that then just tips you over the edge and suddenly you're just having a nightmare.
Yeah, suddenly in this whole world of shit that you don't understand.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, people just don't get it in the same way. Yeah, it's fucking messed up, isn't it? It's like your brain's a nightmare. Like, that's the one thing I'm always like, my brain's a fucking nightmare. And my recent thing of trying to be zen with my brain is that my brain is only trying to protect me. You know, like, all of
yeah, completely.
in the negative stuff, but my brain's only trying to protect me. Yeah. And rather than go, oh, brain, you're a wanker, I'm not going to do it. And you know, and that's when you become self-destructive because you're
completely.
No, you're wrong. I'm not having it. I'm just going to fucking kill myself slowly. And that's you trying to fight your brain. So now I just go, now I'm like really gentle with my brain. I'm like, it's all right, mate. You know, like, no, I appreciate that. That's a mindfulness thing that like some of these things are also frustrating, but there is so much truth in it. And
you're like, there is, you're right, yeah.
And like, I hate all those kind of glib expressions, but you know, and now I'm
so much of it, but you're right, it is right, it's true, and it's a pain that you've got to kind of go, fuck, it is right.
No, and it's a fucking pain that you have to do it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You're like, why? Yeah. Why me? And then that feeds into you. You're like, oh, I'm so shit, I don't deserve it. Because you're like,
you know what? That's true,
why do I have to do it? And that, but then it's like that acceptance that I just have to do all that shit. Otherwise, I'm really shit. And I'm a bad dad, and I'm a bad husband, and I'm bad at everything.
Yeah.
I just have to do it.
No, you're right. I like I say, I think, if nothing else, this last week or so has got to be a kick out the backside because it is like, it's exactly like you just say, it is that, it kind of is that simple. When you're in that shitty hole, like we say, it isn't, but if you're doing it and keeping on top of it and doing what you've got to do, then it is. And it's like, it's weird, these little things. Like, I do try to, there are things I still do right. Like, I don't drink a lot anymore because, especially when I was really low, like, seeing how much worse that made me. And then,
yeah.
I think it wasn't long after the marathon, because I'd been training and that for it, and that was my goal. Like, I'd stopped drinking, and then the first couple of times I went afterwards, the fact I'd lost this target that I was training for, and then I'd go for a drink, like, and I would be, oh, mate, it just got me so down. I just would be, on a nice night out, I'd come home, and I'd just end up crying. And it was partly alcohol, partly because I hadn't readjusted now to the fact that I didn't have this goal that I was training for and that thing that I was, you know, striving towards. And I stopped drinking for a year and don't really drink much now.
I mean, I'm drinking now, but
I've got water.
I used to. You're winning. I do remember the days when I'd be out on the booze with the mates, and then I'd just be uncontrollably crying. And then,
yeah,
like, why are you crying? I'm like, because I fucking hate myself. I don't know what to tell you.
It was weird. It was so strange, like, just coming home and being like, oh, man, I feel like crap. And I just realised, yeah, it's better to just not drink for a while. Like, I can drink now. I know when it's all right to, and I know when it's not.
Yeah,
and I've got a balance on that, and I'm not a massive drinker anyway, so it doesn't matter. But like, the example is like my work Christmas do. I tend to get quite shitty around Christmas because my wedding anniversary was in December, so I always just get a bit like, ugh. And I think I'd had it was one of those days where I hadn't slept much. Work Christmas party, I was like, I'm just not going to drink because it's just I'll drink, I'm tired, I'll go home, and I'll feel shit. And why do it to yourself? Like, it's better not to. Easier, safer, not to.
It's very difficult at times, like Christmas and birthdays. It just brings up everything because, like, it's a moment to, like, you reflect. And, you
know, yeah.
And like, they're killers. They really are. It's taken me a long time, and I'm still struggling with Christmas and birthdays. Like, I've got a lot better. Like,
yeah.
Many, many years, I just used to drink fucking loads at Christmas. Like, really, just ruined myself. Right now, but it is hard. I think. Have you? You know, like when you're feeling like you're struggling.
Mm.
Just a little thing that I do is I watch shit on YouTube. You know, watch shit like cats and. But like I watch.
That's immediately what I thought. Cats and pianos.
No, I watch things like like inspirational TED talks and things. Like okay. Most TED talks are pretty inspirational. Yeah. Like I'll watch like a TED talk about someone who's been through something hard, like and that helps me put things into perspective. But I also watch, you know, like really cheesy shit, like who's it? Chris Robbins, who does the big kind of, you know, he does massive things about you can achieve, you can do well. And, yeah. And this other one, and this I really recommend this guy, Eckhart Tolle.
I know the name.
Yeah, he wrote a book about pretty much you separating yourself from your feelings and right. observing your feelings. And I watch his stuff all the time because he's like this little kind of like little. It's so now I think he's Germany. It's like a Buddha, and he just goes.
He's a guru.
Yeah, and it's just like. You know, like, it's fine if you're like that. You observe it and you let it go. And, like, you know, like, so when I'm really struggling, I need backup. So I watch things like that just to back up. And then they'll say things and I'll go, oh, I know that. And then, like, oh, right, I've forgotten to do that.
Yeah.
And, like, if you've been through, like, quite a bit of therapy, like you have, sometimes you just need, like, reinforcement.
Yeah.
So it might be talking to someone who like knows about it,
yeah,
or just like just get stuck in like half an hour on YouTube before you go out, just to remind you of all the things that you've forgotten to do.
Yeah,
like that really works for me. I do that all the time.
I have a look at that. I've heard of that Eckhart Tolle. Definitely heard of him. The other fella. Don't know. I'd be lying if I said I had.
No, I think it's Chris Robbins. He's the he's really, really fascinating, actually. But just to you know, like just you tap into things that are going to make you feel a bit better. Like I'm a sucker for like depressing music.
And the other Same.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I was listening to Spiritualize the other day, and I'm like, I shouldn't be listening to this now. He's talking about being an addict. I'm associating all of my faults with addiction.
Yeah.
That's making me feel bad. I'm going to listen to Radio 4. And it's doing me out.
Yeah.
And then I was like, got home and I was like, oh, I'll just have a little YouTube with, you know, it, like I just got put in like inspirational speakers and I watch something and then I feel it just takes me back to where I need to be.
Yeah, definitely.
Takes me back into that way of thinking, a little less self-destructive, a little bit more, oh, yeah, I forgot about
that. I just need to do it and keep on top of it again because, like say, it's not out of the ordinary, especially after like an early turn at work. I'll get home, I'll be tired, I'll feel, and this isn't going down like the proper down the rabbit hole of shit, but I'll feel a bit sad. I might put on something really depressing. I might even have a little cry. And then I kind of get over it. That's how it normally works. It normally works all right. Like I can get upset for a minute and then I can be all right again. But I still think there's got to be some method before that where I try to go, you're going that way a little bit. Just don't put the depressing music on. Don't do it.
I only like depressing music. I don't like any other music.
I listen to anything and everything, really. Like, genuinely, I listen to heavy metal. I listen to pop. And I think I even said this the last time I was on with Stu and Chris, because I said something about listening to Lamar. Like, fucking Lamar. Like, that's...
I was singing Lamar.
The guy that used to be on Fame Academy years ago. I remember not that long before I'd done the podcast. I'd stuck that on for some. I just thought, this is some Lamar. But that wasn't depressing. That was fine. But I'm a nightmare for just... And I know the songs that will get me. And so I'll deliberately put them on at times.
Oh, yeah, because you kind of want it, don't you?
That's a little bit. Sometimes I think it's a good thing. Sometimes I think there's all right to have a little cry. And I like that generally is all right. But there's other times where I just go too far. And it is that self-destructive thing again, where I'll just go too far and I'll be like, no, I want to just go, I'm going to keep listening to this crap, and I'm not helping myself. And it's so easy to just go, just put S Club 7 on, but I don't.
That's the thing, I kind of curtail it when it goes self-destructive. Like, I start feeling it, and I'm always on the edge of self-destruction, always. And then I start feeling it, and I know when it's going, and then I pull back. But I tell you what I do like is what you said, that like, if you want to cry, cry.
Yeah.
Fucking cry. Like, I haven't cried for years. Like, I'm on so many fucking meds.
Oh, you're right.
Cry if I wanted to. And like, sometimes I desperately want to, because it's a lovely feeling, and it's like, men aren't allowed to do it, but when you do it,
the release.
You feel better after, don't you?
It sounds weird. The release I had with all this pent up, clearly, and it was when there was a lot going on, and I was really pent up. And just from when my skipper pulled me in and said, like, are you all right? Fuck me. Like, that release in itself made, like, just having a cry and a chat, that in itself made me feel a lot better. I still wasn't fine, but that made me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
Like, so that's what I mean. There's definitely room for a good little sob now and again. Just, I probably have a tendency to go too far down the depressing hole, but yeah, like I say, that's why I'm really open about talking about stuff, because I know, especially back in the day, there's so much I got wrong. There's so much I still get wrong now. So I'd rather be honest about it, because that might help somebody go, I'm doing that, or I'm going that way, like, and have that little click that I didn't have and sometimes don't have now still.
Totally agree. It's exactly why I'm in. Exactly why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Exactly why. And I don't tend to think of it in terms of doing things wrong, because that's your journey, you know? But there's things.
That's what my therapist said as well. Yeah, I remember described it as the things I'd done wrong. She's like, no, you didn't do it wrong. It's just, what it is.
You get there your own way.
Yeah, completely.
But essentially, like, you think, I just think it's really good if people can hear other human beings talking about it, then they'll go, I'm not a fucking weirdo. The world, I don't need to die because they do it as well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's good enough for me.
Do you get a lot of messages from people kind of giving you their stories now, I guess, from listening to the podcast?
Yeah.
That was one thing after the chat I'd done with Pip. I proper was overwhelmed. I had so many messages from people who were like, I've had this thing going on and now I'm going to get help and all this, man. That was like, that made everything worthwhile. Like, all of
that's what I mean.
It really does.
You turn it around.
Yeah.
Like, all of that pain and that hardship you went through and all the things and the fallout of it, it's suddenly been channeled into something worthwhile.
Mm.
And it almost, maybe not quite, but almost starts to make it good. And that's really my feeling now. I feel that quite strongly.
Yeah, definitely. I can't go back and undo it all. So go forward and make some good come of it. That's what I try to do. I don't get it right all the time, but yeah, I hope to still do more for PTSD 999 and other mental health organisations as well. So hopefully I can continue that little glimmer of good.
Well, we're going to have to wrap it up.
Bedtime.
We've gone over, but I think what I want to say is that it's been a real privilege to talk to you. And I also want to say you can talk to me.
Hmm.
Like, if you need to talk to anyone and you need to talk to someone who's not going to fucking judge and you just want to fucking offload.
Yeah.
Like, I'll text you my number.
Yeah, definitely.
Consider me a...
I do talk to
one
people.
Of the gang.
And I've got like a little WhatsApp group with three other lads from my intake. And I've got to I'll name drop them because otherwise they'll sulk. But it's Dave Chivers, Jim West, and Chris Hamilton. Like, I'll always talk to them. I'll always have that little vent. But it just doesn't always I don't know. I don't always get it right, and whether it's not that I'm not always saying the same, the right things to make people realise when I'm going a bit downhill. But yeah, like, because you you know what to say and you know what I've got to do. Yeah, definitely.
It's funny because I often think, like, again, the addiction thing. Like, I think people with mental health problems need a sponsor. You know, someone will go, someone will just say, no, you're being fucking stupid now.
Yeah, definitely.
You're not doing what you should be doing. And yeah. now look, you're in a mess. and then they'll go, but it's fine, you're in a mess. Like, I'll help you out. You know, I'll help you out of the mess. But I always think, like, quite often I talk to people and I think you just need someone to just go, oh, stop being a fucking idiot now. It's all right. Like, yeah. You're doing what I used to do, we'll be fine. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, anyway.
One other thing that I've got to say, because you said this is definitely the last thing, and it's something that almost ties in with that, you know, doing your exercises for your mental health. My mum was an alcoholic. I still remember, like, when I was a kid, she said about how being an alcoholic, you're never not an alcoholic anymore. You're always a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah.
And that is what I think of my mental health. And it's so true when you talk about the addiction and stuff as well. I massively think that about my mental health. You're always recovering. So I don't think I'll ever just go, I'm perfectly fine again now. And I think that would be dangerous to go, I don't ever need to worry about that ever again. Yeah, I think, and again, I'm saying it, but yeah, I don't do enough. But it's really true. Like, you're never not mental now. You're just a recovering mental.
Yeah, I always say you're in the mental gang, and you know, and you've always got to be working on it. And yeah. I liked it when I said about the addiction thing, and it clicked because, like, it really sticks for me. It really does. And if you look into, like, the 12 steps, it's a big bit about forgiveness.
I might have to do that before bed. I'll have a little glance.
Russell Brand's recovery book gives you a really good whistle-stop tour of addiction, and it pretty much covers mental health.
Really?
Yeah, it really, really does.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't know that.
I desperately want to get him on just to go, thank you, because he's taught me loads of stuff, but... Yeah, it really covers it, and that acceptance that you've got an illness.
Yeah.
Forgiving yourself for having an illness. No,
yeah.
It all makes sense.
I might have to have a little look at it. That's another book I'm going to have to buy. It's going to be an expensive mum.
All right, mate. Thank you very, very much. Thank
no
you.
Worries.
Yeah, it's fantastic, man. Like, seriously. Yeah, definitely. This is enough.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.